Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24. Whether we are there or not, ITSP Magazine still gets the best stories. Plenty of conferences and events spark our curiosity and allow us to start conversations with some of the world's brightest minds. In person or virtually, Sean Martin and Marco Cappelli go on location and sit down with them at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Together, we discover what the synergy of these three elements means for the future of humanity. At AT&T, we simplify securing your most valuable business assets by providing broad cybersecurity experience and award-winning services. We manage the risk, you reap the reward. Learn more at cybersecurity.att.com.
Marco.
Sean.
Are we all getting caffeinated for our trip to RSA?
We are. You know, when you drive, you don't want to fall asleep.
I know.
And shots on the road, they need to have energy. So,
and technology, God bless technology. It reminds us in our car that we need to pause and have, some of them even say, take a coffee break.
Yeah, there are cars that do that. I don't necessarily listen to them, but I do listen to my wearable when it says time to stretch your legs.
There we go.
Yeah. Let's do it.
And if you don't, we're going to block other services, right?
Yeah, I got a ransomware from that.
There you go. Well, this year, I thought I was going to fly, I'm in fact driving to San Francisco. You're flying, and our guest, I presume, is not swimming. He's also flying. Nico, how are you?
Hey, great to see you. Sean, great to see you. Marco, how are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Always good to see you, my friend, and congratulations on the keynote at RSA Conference 2024.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think everybody's going to have a good time listening to you, as they always do, and the topic is great, and I think, as you were saying before we started recording, sounds like you have some surprises, which we'll tease here. We won't give away any surprises, but it's going to be a fun engagement there, so I'm excited.
Sure.
For people.
Over the years, I've spoken at RSA, I believe, 9 times, but this is going to be the first keynote, and I'm really happy about that. It's been a long-term goal for me to do a keynote at RSA, and now is the time to do it.
Well deserved, and 9, that's a good number as well. So, well, I presume pretty much everybody on my show knows who you are, but those who watch from Marco's show may wonder who Miko is. And the new crew that's joining forces may not be familiar with all the other 8 times you've spoken, or 9 times you've spoken at RSA. So a bit of background, Miko, some of the things you've been up to and what you're up to now.
Yeah, well, I've been around forever. One of our younger employees at WithSecure, which is where I work, asked me recently that, hey, Mikko, how do you become a global cybersecurity expert? Or how do you become an expert in anything? And the answer I gave to him was that you simply pick a field and then you work in the field forever. And eventually, everybody's going to assume that you must be an expert. And that's basically what I've done. I started with reverse engineering malware spreading on floppy disks in 1991. And if you think about the changes we've seen over the last 33 years, the world has changed many times over, especially the world of cybersecurity. And I've monitored all those changes throughout my career. I've done malware reverse engineering. I've done hunting of online hackers. I've done profiling of online crime groups. I've tracked governmental attacks. And I've done all of that from Helsinki, which is where I live. And as mentioned today, I work for WithSecure as the chief research officer.
I love it. And holding up that floppy, I don't have one to show as well, but it brings me back to my days at Symantec. I worked in the virus lab, and we'd have stacks and stacks of those boot viruses and all kinds of things. And when when we knew we didn't want that virus to be around anymore, we had actually punch hole the floppy to make it to make it not usable any longer.
You're confusing the younger listeners. They have no idea what you're speaking about.
Oh yeah, that's somebody's a floppy what?
That's right. Yeah. Punch hole what exactly?
Yeah. Just the idea that you had to carry data around is so foreign. But I know the world changes and it changes for the better. I think we're from cybersecurity point of view, we're in a much better place than we were back then, or where we were, let's say, 10 years ago. Cybersecurity, it might not seem like it, but we are making progress.
Any highlights you want to share on that? Any
well, think about the fact that most of the computing we do today, we do with our mobile phones. The most common computer worldwide is a mobile phone. The operating systems we run in our mobile phones are much, much more secure from cybersecurity point of view than, you know, the Windows on your laptop or a Mac OS on your MacBook. And a great example of that is linked to the topic that I'll be speaking about at RSA, because the title of my keynote is The First Decade of Corporate Ransomware. We don't have a ransomware problem on our phones. We don't have a ransomware problem on our tablets. It is a computer problem. And that's one of the best examples on how security has been getting better. Ever since iPhone was released 14 years ago, more and more computing has been moving to more limited devices which are not programmable by the end user. And that is a trade-off. We get great security benefits, but of course, it's also a much more restrictive system. But this particular trade-off is good for security.
I'm going to get on that because there is probably the majority of the population that prefer it like this, right? Like I just want to have something to use, and I always end up having the example of the car. I don't need to know how the car works as long as it does, right?
Absolutely.
But does it limit the way that we can improve on it and leave it more in the end of the corporation, the big tech company that decide what we're going to use? And limit maybe the startup to jump on innovation?
Mm-hmm. This trade-off only really affects the people who are programmers. I mean, the big restriction you have on these more limited devices is that you cannot write programs on them, or you have to be a registered developer. You have to send your applications to be approved if you want to have them run on other people's devices. And that restriction is completely foreign for the vast majority of users of these systems. But it is a trade-off. They are not real computers at all. I mean, computers are devices that you can program. You cannot program your iPhone, not directly, not in the sense we think about when we think about programming a computer. So I think it's a trade-off worth taking. We do need real computers for computing tasks, for writing programs. But for everyday use, using iPhones, iPads, things like Chromebooks are great trade-offs for security. And again, you don't have ransomware problem on any of these devices.
And maybe describe a bit of that for our listeners. I think up and down the stack, I have security leaders who probably understand this better than me, practitioners as well, but then also broader ITSP magazine may not understand how ransomware works and why that's the case on those devices. So maybe a brief overview, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. Well, the basic idea is that there has to be a way of users or the devices to be able to install software on them. Some ransomware on computer systems is led in by the end users. End users download and click execute programs, or they get owned by exploits, which are fairly easy to do on computers because they are designed to be programmable. On your iPad, you cannot click on a file and execute it. If someone sends you a malicious link, it might phish you, but it will not run code on your system. It will not install an app. And of course, exploits are possible. They do happen. We have seen them on these devices, but they are so much harder to do that the going price for exploiting a single user through their iPhone is $100,000. That's the kind of price that governmental attackers might pay to gain access to a political figure's phone, but they will not pay that kind of money to target an individual user. So it's just better protected system because it doesn't carry the same legacy as our computers do, which are based on operating systems designed decades ago.
So what about the, sorry, Marco, because you mentioned programmable developers working within the, we'll say the iOS ecosystem, they're bound to certain rules and controls and then auditing and reviews before the app gets published, things like that. So there's the device, there's the operating environment for the application, but then there's the app itself. And presumably it's connecting to some other service in the cloud, right? That's it, or maybe some data center even. Talk about the exposure there with respect to ransomware, because you mentioned it can't compromise the device, but it could still phish you and you're not completely risk-free, right? So maybe a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm specifically speaking about the endpoint security, about the device itself. The systems it connects to, the servers that run the backends, those can definitely be hacked. They can definitely be attacked by ransomware. That's a different question. But when we think about endpoint security as a particular problem, this is the big differentiator. I've sometimes used PlayStations and Xboxes as a metaphor. Xbox is the most secure Windows computer you could buy. Xboxes are made by Microsoft. They run Windows. Funnily enough, you never hear about malware on Xboxes. And it's a great example on how the old wisdom about how if hackers gain physical access to your device, it's a game over, is no longer true. The latest Xbox has been out for a decade. There's still no jailbreak available for it. There's no pirated games. Everybody has a copy of this Windows computer. Nobody has broken the security of the device, even though they can open it up and pick up a soldier and try to figure out a way to execute code on it. Nobody's done it. And that's a massive security achievement. And that's basically the same security model you have on your iPhones or on your Android devices or on your iPads.
Well, so we're just going to walk around with an Xbox, I guess.
Yes.
in your pocket. That's
right. I'm giving you a permission to buy an Xbox.
Perfect.
There you go. So then I'm not going to record or work anymore because I'm just going to play video games.
Yeah, thanks, Miko.
thanks so much. So going back to the keynote, I mean, you're going to look at the 10 decades of corporate malware, and then you look into the future of the next 10 decade, which is where I really get curious. So
yeah.
Any hints on that? What's going to happen?
So we found CryptoLocker and CryptoWall ransomware families in 2013. That's 11 years ago. So why am I speaking about the first decade of corporate ransomware? Well, CryptoLocker was the very first Bitcoin-enabled ransomware. We had seen malware before that, but none of them used Bitcoin to collect the ransom payments. And of course, that's the thing which really made the problem explode. The fact that they could actually move money around in blockchain made it much harder to catch the criminals. But the first year, from 2013 to 2014, all the early ransomware attacks were targeting home users. And it's hard to even remember this anymore. But first CryptoLocker and CryptoWall and a couple of other early clones of those, they were trying to gain access to home computers and they would encrypt your photos. Basically, they would go after your photos, maybe your documents, and then they would ask you to pay $200 in Bitcoin. That's what all the early versions were doing. It was not a corporate problem early on at all. That started changing then in 2014 when they slowly but surely started to realize, when the attackers realized that there's much more money to be made by targeting corporate entities, enterprises, public sector. It's much harder to hack your way into a corporate network than into a random home computer. Home computer is a very easy target, but you can ask for much larger payments from corporate systems. And when you look at the problem today, in 2024, nobody's targeting home users with ransomware. It's only a corporate problem and a public sector problem. So it really has changed, and we've been living in that world for one decade now.
And so, I mean, I could probably pull a few out of my head, but any examples of corporate, notable corporate ransomware activities that
okay, really highlight. But let's think about this. What could they be? Well, I have a term for these. I call them the cybercrime unicorns, and that's of course a reference to unicorn companies. And what I'm speaking about here is that the largest ransomware gangs, if you look at their revenue, if you look at their profit, if you look at their wealth, if they would be companies, they would definitely be categorized as unicorn startups. And when I speak about groups like these, I'm referring to Lockbit, Alpha, Klopp, Akira, Royal, Black Pasta, Ragnar, Play, on and on. There's dozens of these groups. And one thing I'll point out in my keynote is how corporate or how organized these gangs have become. We'll look at a couple of examples on just how they are starting to build bureaucracy in their operations, because they've been operating for years and years. They have physical offices, they have an HR department, they have lawyers, they have business analysts. It's starting to be like a boring job at the office in some sense. And maybe my favorite example on how these groups have become much more, how they've become organized crime, like online organized crime gangs, is how much they do branding. Like the fact that I just listed names, basically brands of organized crime gangs, is already an example of that. And all these gangs, like Alpha and Klopp and Conti and Lockbit, they have logos. They have names, logos, websites. And it might seem a bit weird, like why would a crime gang come up with a brand? But then when you think about real world organized crime gangs, they have brands as well. One of the strongest brands in the world is Hell's Angels. That's a great brand. Everybody knows Hell's Angels. We recognize their emblem. And it's a scary brand. It's a powerful brand, but it's also a scary brand. Like, you know that they are a group that you don't want to mess with. And that's the reputation these ransomware gangs are trying to build. They're trying to build a reputation that if you work for an IT department and you come to the office Monday morning only to realize that, oh my God, we've been hit with ransomware. And then, oh my God, it's Klopp. Oh my God, it's Akira. Because we know these brands, we know these groups by name, we know them by reputation, and we know that this is serious. Like, these guys have been in business for years. They know what they're doing. They use strong encryption. We will not be able to decrypt the things they've encrypted. But we also know by reputation that these criminals are honest criminals. Like, if you play with their rules, if you pay the ransom, they will give you tools to decrypt the files. They will not leak your files on their leak site. They will not hack you again. They promise. And they pretty much keep their promise. Doing anything else would be bad for their business.
It sounds so much like The Godfather.
Says the Italian.
Says the Italian, right? No, but I mean, I was like smiling and nodding with my head when you were saying these things, because it all makes sense. I'm like, where is he going with this branding thing and how this reputation, which has always been in the building of any, you know, even evil brand, that's sure. still that's
part of building any enterprise, including criminal enterprises. And it's also interesting how one of the biggest problems these largest ransomware gangs ever had, and how the biggest challenge maybe ransomware ecosystem ever had, were in 2017 when we saw WannaCry and we saw NotPetya, because these two cases are probably the largest ransomware cases in history, and they were both cases where paying the ransom didn't work. So they really destroyed this reputation that these gangs were trying to build. They had a pretty good reputation already by the time WannaCry hit. People sort of knew that paying the ransom works, and then WannaCry came and paying the ransom didn't work. 3 months later, NotPetya, same thing, paying the ransom didn't work. With WannaCry, it was supposed to work, but it didn't because it was buggy. With NotPetya, it wasn't even supposed to work from the beginning. Being or looking like a ransomware was just a cover story because NotPetya wasn't ransomware at all. It was actually a cyber weapon developed by Russian government used to attack Ukraine. It just looked like ransomware. It actually really was a wiper. And even if you paid, you didn't get your files back. It didn't encrypt the files. It actually overwrote the files.
And because I've heard, so obviously there's holding the files for ransom, they encrypt them. They can decrypt them if they want. Now they're leaking them as well, and they're not leaking them if you pay. So a bit of extortion there. How much of it is, or are there any other changes with respect to that, what their aims are? And in terms of targets, are they looking at systems within the organization? Are they targeting individuals? I can think targeting executives can get you a nice double whammy, right? Mm-hmm. I have this picture of you on the beach that you don't want to get out, and I also have access to your corporate account, which is
right.
So what do things look like from that perspective?
The most common targeting mechanism isn't actually targeting specific targets at all. It starts from having an exploit. So you have an exploit, you have a way in, which might be something you've developed yourself in your organized crime gang or something you buy from an IOC, initial access broker. Someone else has figured out a way to get in and they just sell you the access. In both cases, the end result is that the victims are organizations of all kinds, all sizes, from all over the internet. It's as if someone would have shot at the internet with a shotgun, hitting random targets. And you can easily see this simply by browsing the leak sites. Go to Tor Hidden Service and go to one of the leak sites of the largest ransomware gangs and just look at the victims. This particular cyber problem, if you compare ransomware into denial of service attacks or data theft or banking trojans, this is completely different problem from visibility point of view. You can look at the victims yourself. Just go to our website and you'll see exactly how big of a problem it is. You can keep scrolling these leak sites for, you know, forever. There's more and more and more victims. Right next to each other, you have completely different organizations, a public sector, let's say a hospital from Canada. Then you have a furniture making company from Denmark. Then you have a steel mill from Brazil. Completely different areas, completely different businesses. Some of them are public sector, some of them are private, some of them are publicly listed large enterprises, some of them are small companies all over the world. And that's a great example on how it really is as if someone would have shot at the internet with a shotgun. They have a vulnerability. They have a hole in a VPN server, in an RDP server, in a file management tool. Then they just scan the whole internet, find the victims, and try to break in. And that's why it looks so random. That's the most typical story.
It's a randomware.
I'll steal that, Marco.
Go for it.
I'll get the domain right away.
You gave me permission for the Xbox. Gave you permission to use that.
Nice
well,
one.
I am really excited about this keynote. It's fascinating, all these things you're telling us, and I will definitely make my way to see it, and I hope a lot of people will do. Sean, when is that? You want to give the...
Well, it's Wednesday, May 8th. First thing in the morning, I think. Maybe after after coffee, 8:30 in the morning there.
8:30, South Stage Keynote. That's where I'll be.
Yes, South Stage Keynote. And I was looking to see what else is in there. Yeah, so I will be there for sure. I hear you say there's going to be some secrets, so I'm excited to hear what you uncover.
I will make a promise that you will be surprised during the talk.
All right.
There you go. Just one more reason to be there. And the other reason also is to see you in person and,
I know.
And sure. say hi to you.
Yeah, it's been far too long for that. So looking forward to that, Miko. And again, congratulations. It's going to be a great talk, I know. And certainly everybody attending the conference will get something from it. There's no question about that. So thanks, Miko. Enjoy that session and safe travels to San Francisco. See you when you arrive. And everybody watching and listening, thanks for following us on our Chats on the Road to RSA conference. Lots of stuff. And there's another one. I think we have one more. That's the alert to say we have another episode recording in a minute. Yeah, lots to cover, lots to talk about. And appreciate you, Miko, joining us, and appreciate everybody for following us. Thanks.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Marco. I'll see you in Moscone.
See you in Moscone.
Perfect.
At AT&T, we simplify securing your most valuable business assets by providing broad cybersecurity experience and award-winning services. We manage the risk, you reap the reward. Learn more at cybersecurity.att.com. SquareX helps organizations detect, mitigate, and threat hunt web attacks happening against their users in real time. With its innovative browser-native security product, SquareX safeguards enterprise users from a spectrum of web-based threats, encompassing malicious files, websites, scripts, and compromised networks. Learn more at sqrx.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Sean and Marco's On Location event coverage conversations. Please take a moment to give the show a good rating and leave a comment. Remember to share this podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues. Come back for more conversations and follow Sean Martin and Marco Cappelli as they continue their journey toward redefining cybersecurity and society.